In this second part of our interview with Duncan Barford, the topic of ghosts is considered. Duncan provides us with his take on the nature of ghosts and goes into detail about his experiences with otherworldly entities. The conversation then moves on to the pendulum and how this mystical tool can guide us with insights and inspirations.
I feel that we now can move on and talk more about actual daily stuff that you've been getting up to in Brighton, seeing as we're here now.
Yeah.
And one of the things that's fascinated me is you've recently got a new YouTube channel out, which shows some of the stuff you've been getting up to regarding ghosts, and you've been doing some ghost sittings, yeah, for example, which, I mean, I'd love to do something like this soon. And it's just, you've gone to the Brighton, am I right in saying it's Brighton Town Hall, but it's the basement, and there's an old police station there, which is notorious for having sort of strange activities going on, ghosts, if you like, whatever. But certainly, if you watch the video, and I've provided a link to it in the description of this podcast episode, I certainly got the sense that there was some very odd obviously it's coming through on a video on YouTube, but it looked to me like there was some sort of weird sense of there being a presence in there.
Yeah.
But, I mean, how did you feel at the time, and do you actually believe that there could actually be a very real otherworldly presence?
Yeah, yeah.
In these kind of ghostly, haunted locations.
Oh, good question. I've always been fascinated by ghosts ever since I was a kid, and I've always wanted to do something like that, spend the night in a place that's haunted completely by myself, you know, to see what would happen. And I'm glad to say that I wasn't disappointed,
right,
with the stuff that went on in the old police sales museum. But my views on ghosts, okay, is that, yeah?
Go for
it. Sure. Yeah, sure. Really interesting ghostly experience a few years ago, which kind of worked as a template for,
right,
for the thing at the old police sales museum. I was on retreat, went to this retreat place in Devon, and it was a silent retreat. You're not allowed to talk to people there, you know, you just sort of work and meditate and stuff.
Yeah.
And yeah, some interesting stuff started to happen. Anyway, it climaxed one night where I was asleep in the dark, and I heard someone get up along the corridor. Heard them walk down the corridor. I assumed they were going to the toilet. But they stopped at my door, and someone knocked on my door. So I just sort of lay there, because, like I said, it's a silent retreat. You know, you're not supposed to talk to anyone.
Right.
And I was sort of thinking, well, if they've got something to say, they'll say it. So nobody said anything. And then I heard the door handle move, and someone came into the room. So I was lying there in the pitch black, and I was thinking, well, this is really, really bad. It must be one of the, you know, people running the retreat come to tell me that something's happened, you know, something at home or something like that. But still, I didn't say anything, you know, because, you know, you're not supposed to talk. So this person came into the room, sat on the foot of my bed, and then they reached out and they put a hand on my forehead, and I was like thinking, well, shit, you know, obviously something awful has happened. But then they got into bed with me.
Whoa, okay.
So I was lying there thinking, well, this wasn't really what I expected on a retreat, but I was thinking, okay. So I was sort of like thinking to myself, you know, sort of thinking, well, who's on this corridor, you know? I was sort of thinking to myself. So this person got into bed with me, they put their arm around me, and I felt their hand on my chest. And it was a woman's hand.
Right.
And I found myself thinking, well, okay, fine, you know. And I sort of, as soon as I started to kind of, you know, respond,
yeah,
suddenly there was nobody there.
Wow.
There was nobody there.
It just literally just vanished.
Yeah, just vanished. And I lay there in the dark, and I thought to myself, well, obviously I dreamt that. Obviously that was a lucid dream. But there was never, during it, any experience of waking up. So I was sort of thinking to myself, well, if that's not a ghost, then what is? I was in this weird sort of paradoxical situation where I thought to myself, well, that must have been a lucid dream.
Mm.
But I didn't have the experience of waking up at any point. I didn't have the experience of transitioning from being asleep to being awake. There was none of that. As far as I was aware, I was awake through the whole thing. But if that wasn't a ghost, then what is? I mean, I sort of know it wasn't, but at the same time, it sort of was.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because if there wasn't any transition for me between waking and sure. sleep, and it seems that I was awake the whole time, then how else can I?
It's fascinating. I mean, yeah. That's because my reaction to that would be, well, is it in a very real sense a sort of a memory of, well, not a memory,
uh-huh.
but a sort of, you know, because there's this idea of a stone tape. Stone wall theory,
which
is the idea of, you know, like this idea that rooms literally remember moments in a very real sense, and things can play out in the way they did hundreds of years ago in a room.
Well, it's interesting you brought that up, because we had kind of supervision sessions with a teacher.
Yeah.
And I mentioned to the teacher that there was some other stuff that happened as well, but that was the most dramatic thing. And I sort of said to the teacher, oh, you know, I had this thing where, you know, there was a ghost and it got into bed with me the other night. And I was expecting him to sort of like shrug it off or something. And he said, when did this happen?
Right.
I was like, well, it was, you know, a couple of nights ago. Why? And he was like, oh, nothing. But I managed to pin him down, and he admitted that other students had experienced similar things.
Wow.
Because the retreat centre was a convent. At various times in the history of this retreat centre, there'd been spates of students sort of experiencing encounters with the nuns.
Sure.
And there was like a graveyard for the nuns on one of the front lawns and stuff like that. And,
right.
You know, I imagine, like, if you were a dead nun walking around your old convent and you suddenly discovered it was full of Buddhists, you might not be best pleased. So that added a sort of like another layer to it as well.
And I guess, because you see, I mean, I'm just trying to think how I would, if that had happened to me, I'm just trying to think how I would have reacted.
Mm.
It would have been, I mean, were you scared by that? Or did you feel a sense of just confusion?
Well, I had quite a few visitations from what appeared to be the same thing.
Right.
And there seemed to be another level to it as well. It was definitely female. Whatever it was, it had a real strong sense of womanliness about it, which was very, very odd. It was quite aggressive. It felt like it was attacking me. On other occasions, like I'd had a nap in the afternoon, and I sensed something like on my feet, like crawling up my body. And it was always, whenever I had an encounter with this thing, it was always trying to get to my heart. So, like, when it got into bed with me, it touched my heart. And when this thing crawled up my body, it was trying to get to my heart.
Right.
And stuff like that. So, like I said, I spoke to the teacher about it. And the teacher said, you know, the Buddha talked quite a bit about ghosts. And the Buddha's, you know, response to ghosts was to meet them with compassion.
Wow.
To give them compassion. And because... You know, when this thing was attacking me, I was doing like my standard kind of Western sort of banishing thing, visualising pentagrams, which got rid of it, you know, which sort of kept it at bay. But so the next time it came, I thought, well, I'll do what the teacher said, and I just sort of surrendered myself to it, just sort of completely opened myself, you know, and just said, look, okay, just have what you want, and it just melted away.
Just melted away.
Yeah. So what's going on there? Do you know what I mean?
I mean, that's amazing, and I The question I sort of have for that is, I wonder if that would have happened to somebody else just in the same room at the same time.
Yeah,
or
yeah.
If it's somehow linked with the individual.
Mm.
Or if the entities only target set people of a certain consciousness or a certain mindset.
Or maybe it's to do with the place. Because this was another feeling I had. Like I said, there's the idea that nuns used to be there and there might be ghosts of nuns, you know, because students... other students had supposedly seen the ghosts of nuns. But there was something deeper to it sometimes. I sort of had a feeling that this thing, whatever it was kind of using the nun stuff in order to manifest. I just had a feeling that whatever it was, it probably wasn't even really human or had never been human.
Right.
But was somehow using... you know, old bits of memories and, you know, our associations in order to manifest. I mean, that's completely subjective, you know, I haven't got any evidence. It was just a feeling that there was, like, yet another level underneath all that stuff. And this thing was something that was probably not even human at all, that seemed to be somehow connected with that place, that sort of land.
Fascinating. So it's almost... it's an entity, but not necessarily... a ghost in the conventional sense, which, I mean, obviously the traditional idea of a ghost is, oh, it's a dead person.
Just
their spirit, their consciousness just floating around, not quite ready to whatever, I mean, who knows, not quite ready to pass on to some next phase of existence.
Yeah.
But that's fascinating, the idea that it could be non-human, it could be from some other dimension, from some other reality entirely, sort of. I mean, I know that this is a subject that's come up time and time again. People like, again, going back to people like David Icke, it's this idea that there's these realities within realities, and Icke argues, for example, that the reptilians, the idea that there's this reptilian bloodline that controls the world, and they, politicians and that, are manifestations of this reptilian creature that doesn't come from this reality, and in a very real sense they're not human.
Yeah.
So the entity that you speak of, I mean, my immediate reaction to that is perhaps it's linked with this idea that there's these the only word for it is entity, that comes in a very real sense, comes from a different place entirely, comes from some other world, other existence. But I mean, do you feel that in your experience of going to places, you know, haunted locations or whatever, that you've ever had that sense before, like, or again or since? This idea that there's an otherworldly sense to what's going on.
Yeah. Well, what I did was I kind of looked at that experience, you know, that I've just told you, and thought about it, and it's just a mess, you know, it's just a mess. There's just a load of stuff there. There's a lucid dream, maybe,
right,
that didn't appear to be a lucid dream. There are stories that, you know, sort of stories going around subliminally. I mean, I'd seen the nun's graveyard on the front lawn. I'd thought to myself, well, if I was one of these nuns, I'd be annoyed, you know. So there's a sort of like narrative that I kind of half made up myself.
Sure.
It's just a mess. The whole thing's a mess. What I'd say is, what it boils down to is, a ghost is an experience.
Okay.
Yeah. I would say that ghosts don't exist. Until they manifest.
Right. So they're not just hanging around rooms waiting for people to come in and...
Yeah.
It's this sort of old cartoony style way of looking at ghosts.
No. Difficult to explain, but...
Do you think they're linked to the individual? I mean, going back to that point, do you feel that perhaps they're very much... part of a subjective experience?
Yeah. You see, I think it all ties back with what we were talking about magic earlier.
Right.
Oh, it's so difficult to explain this stuff.
Yeah, that's all right.
Yeah.
I guess it's almost one of the most fundamental kind of questions you can ask somebody is, you know, because it encapsulates so many different topics.
Yeah.
Because my perspective on it is I'm convinced that there is such a thing as a ghost, but only in the sense that it's an experience, as you've said, it's an experience that people have. But I have no take on what the nature of that ghost is, because I think there's just no evidence for it being a dead person. But at the same time, how are we ever going to know if it's some entity from parallel worlds and all this business? There's so many different theories.
Yeah.
And I, in a way, I kind of like the idea that it could perhaps be this sort of individual encounter.
Yeah.
That was meant to happen, and it's like something that you're meant to experience. It was like but then again, it's tough because you look at reports of things like poltergeists and you think, well, what's that?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, what could that possibly be? This force that moves physical objects.
I mean, consider the whole gamut of experiences of ghosts. So, like you said, poltergeists.
Yeah.
There's sort of like the spooky shape that appears.
Yeah.
That's a ghost. There was my sort of lucid dream wasn't, that's a ghost.
Yeah.
Someone goes on a Ouija board and the glass moves and spells out a letter, apparently that's an experience of a ghost.
When
a medium in a dark room channeling communications, well, supposedly those are the words of a ghost.
Yeah.
All these sort of completely different experiences, and yet we kind of attribute them to the same thing.
Yeah,
somehow.
Indeed. I mean, and I think there's even a theory that UFOs are ghosts.
Right.
That it's all part of the same thing. It's like they're. I mean, I think it was Terence McKenna, who's somebody that I've always been fascinated by. He's a guy that in the 60s, 70s, he died in 2000, unfortunately, but he was sort of a pioneer of doing psychedelics, and he kind of outlined, he created a roadmap, really, alongside people like Timothy Leary. But one of the things that Terence McKenna always said, that one of the things that the psychedelic will teach you if you take certain substances such as ayahuasca and all this sort of thing, is that in a very real sense, all of these experiences we have are all part of the same thing, which is that it all goes back to what you said earlier in the last part of our interview, which was the idea that Jung had regarding the subconscious and the fact that in a very real sense, all these things like UFOs and ghosts and that might represent this subconscious manifestation.
Yeah.
As sort of like people believe in UFOs, so therefore UFOs exist.
Yeah, or an experience of them arises. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
But if you actually scientifically try to investigate them, you would fall short at every stage because they're not really physical, that in the sense that you can go and investigate an old church up the road and say, right, when was this built?
Yeah.
The UFO is this sort of intangible, ineffable kind of concept, and same with ghosts.
Yeah. I mean, my view is that a ghost as a dead person doesn't exist because it's a dead person. As soon as something manifests, then that ceases to be spiritual, that becomes material straight away. So say the Ouija board, we connect with someone and the letters are spelling out, that is not a dead person anymore, that is something that exists. For me, it's if a ghost is something spiritual, then it can't exist, because that's what spirit is. Spirit is what is beyond the material. Spirit doesn't exist. If you say to people, you know, what do you think ghosts are, they'll usually sort of end up explaining, well, they're energy, you know, or they're some sort of wispy kind of stuff. And it's like, well, no, that can't be right, because that would exist. That would be material. That wouldn't be spirit.
Yeah.
So for me, spirit is something that doesn't exist. Anything that does exist isn't spirit, is material. This is why I don't understand, like, the contemporary way of going about ghost hunting with like EMF detectors and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Well, surely you're picking up radiation, you know.
Yeah.
How is a ghost made of radiation? That's a material thing.
I mean, it feels like they're almost deluding themselves because they misunderstand the very nature of what they're hunting for.
What I do understand though is like, say a program like Most Haunted.
Yeah.
They're doing magic. That's a magical ritual. They go into a haunted place and they start sort of asking questions and knocks start occurring.
Yeah.
That's a magical ritual. I mean, you might go into a place and there's a knocking sound, but if you're asking questions and taking the knocking sound as a response, you're creating a ghost. You're making an experience, you know.
Right.
Most Haunted makes sense to me as sort of like, you know, people doing magic to make ghosts appear.
That's a very, very fascinating way of looking at that.
Yeah.
I must say that's, you know, Most Haunted, it's this, in case you're not from the UK, it's a television show that is put out. It's been going on for years. It's just this sort of ghost night, weekly, whatever it is, show where they go and investigate haunted locations, castles and stuff, and it's live, usually televised late at night for, you know, Mass Effect. And they investigate these locations, and you get mediums such as Derek Okora, who basically throw it out there in the open and just say, look, are you there? You know, can you speak with us? And then you hear the occasional knock and all this business, and it's all night cam video footage. And it's fascinating, it's dramatic, but I totally understand where you're coming from saying that. It's just the idea that, they aren't conscious of that fact. Probably not. I mean, maybe they are.
Yeah. But I mean, I also think they've got other pressures because they're making a TV show and it has to be entertaining. Something has to happen, you know.
Yeah. But in a very real sense, they're almost manifesting the ghost.
Yeah.
And I think that's a very fascinating way of looking at it.
Yeah. I also find myself troubled as well by, you know, the way Most Haunted goes about it, and they've got tons of these programs in America as well.
Yeah.
The way they go about it is very aggressive. Like, yeah. I've seen people go into haunted locations and saying, did you die here? Were you in terrible pain? You know, what sort of entity are you going to...
Yeah.
create through asking those sort of questions. And also the way people go about this is often quite arrogant and rude, and I'm sort of thinking, well, if you go into a place like that and you give out that energy, you're going to get something quite specific come back at you.
Absolutely.
So anyway, to come back to the old police sales museum, this is what I was going in with this with this sort of mindset. I wanted to do something quite different. So what I decided to do was to spend the night meditating.
Okay. And this was actually in the police cell itself.
Yeah.
So in the old police station. So
yeah.
You were in a state of meditation.
Yeah.
And at moments you decided to investigate every few hours. You decided to just have a look around.
Yeah.
And I mean, this goes back to the video. Which is, if you've not seen it yet, it's worth taking a look so you understand what it is we're discussing. But you have to look round, and I don't know. I mean, I got the sense from your voice that you personally at the time sensed perhaps there was a presence. I mean, am I right in saying that?
Yeah, there did seem to be something really odd down there.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's part of the town hall, and the staff who work in the town hall, you know, they don't really like going down there.
No.
A lot of them have had quite sort of scary experiences down there. And there was, I mean, it used to be a police headquarters, and there was a chief constable murdered down there.
Right.
I think in the 1850s.
Yeah, I've heard of this.
Yeah, around that time.
But
his name was Henry Solomon.
Okay.
And he was a very highly regarded chap in Brighton at the time. You know, he was quite loved. You know, for the sort of very compassionate fellow by the sound of it. And he was murdered by one of the inmates from the cells, actually on the site.
Right.
Really tragic story from the sound of it. This guy was brought in, suspected of stealing some carpet.
Right.
And they noticed that he was in a really sort of edgy state. So Henry Solomon brought this guy into his office, you know, to sit him down and sort of ask him, you know, what the matter with him was. And when Solomon had his back turned, this guy got up, picked up a poker from the fire and hit him over the head, you know.
Right, and you see that location in your video as well.
Yeah.
The actual fireplace, yeah.
Yeah, now there's all these stories about, oh, it's Henry Solomon's ghost down there. Oh, Henry Solomon's ghost has been seen on this site, you know. And before I went down there, I tried to do some investigation, you know. I was trying to track down where these stories come from. And they just evaporated immediately.
Right.
There's,
that's when,
how you do. Yeah. When you hear these stories about a ghost has been seen, you know, my heart sort of sinks. It's like, well, by who?
Yeah.
When?
Yeah.
You know.
And can they, yeah. Can they confirm it?
Yeah.
Are they happy to go into detail? No. So.
Yeah. So I was doing some like research among the town hall staff, and you know, someone would tell me, "Well, so and so saw so and so," you know, and then I'd go to this person and ask them, and they hadn't, you know, and these stories evaporated. Why would Henry Solomon be haunting that place? Do you know what I mean? I mean, he was a lovely man, by all accounts.
Sure.
You know, why would he want to linger down there?
Yeah, it's sort of funny, isn't it? Because it goes back to this idea that, you know, you've got this intelligent guy. He's obviously got intelligent consciousness, and he's just lingering around the basement, sort of rattling a few cell doors.
Yeah.
And you think, well, yeah, elevate, ascend. And then what are you doing? Yeah.
Now, what you have got down there is those police cells are built on a really, really ancient site.
Right.
There was a priory on the site before the town hall. The priory had a well. That well is still in the basement of the town hall, right near the police cells. Ancient well, tunnels, underground water. So you've got all that going on there. You've got underground water flowing through the building. Also, what you've got down there is the point where all the electricity comes into the building. I went down there with some professional ghost hunters a couple of weeks before I did my vigil. Massive amounts of EM radiation down there as well.
Okay, that's always a sign that
there's
something mysterious going on down, some sort of unexplained phenomenon, I guess.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's been work done, hasn't there, that shows that like EM fields can affect the brain in certain ways. It can make people perceived presences, and also the presence of underground water in haunted places is sort of like, you know, a recognised correlation as well.
That's fascinating.
So never mind about what happened on the site, it's a contained place. There's underground water, there's loads of electromagnetic energy sort of floating around down there. It's you got all that sort of stuff going on at the same time.
Absolutely. So that all that going on, that may have a very real effect on people as when they're down there.
Yeah.
And it's it taps into the perhaps it taps into our way of our perception on, you know, when we're down there on an unconscious level.
Yeah.
And because people obviously wouldn't know about that. I mean, that's the first time I've heard about that, and it's that really could explain a lot of what's going on down there, perhaps. Yeah.
Now I did witness some strange stuff down there. I didn't see anything, but I heard lots of things.
It's a very eerie moment in that video where you raise your night vision camera up and you see a some sort of plastic doll, like a mannequin. And I mean, that actually did make me jump, to be honest. Because, I mean, I wasn't expecting that. Is this the room in question? Or something in there?
I mean, I went in, like I said, a couple of weeks before with the paranormal investigation team, and I wasn't expecting anything to happen, but some stuff did happen. But anyway, without going into detail, what I identified was the most scary bits and the least scary bits. So when I went in by myself to spend the night there a couple of weeks later, I went into the cells where the female prisoners were kept, because this struck me as one of the least active parts of the place. So I was thinking, well, I'll spend the night here and I'll just go out on little forays, to look at the scary bits. So that's where I was, and as far as I was concerned, I was in one of the least scary bits. Little did I know what was going to kick off later. But it was fine. I was sort of meditating away. And then I think it was about sort of 2 o'clock when suddenly I heard somebody coming down the steps into the museum. And I was thinking to myself, that must be the security guard, you know, come down to do a check, because there was a security guard on duty all through the night. But then all I heard was someone like rattling a door handle, and then the sound stopped, and there were no steps sort of going back up. And I managed to pick up a little part of that on the soundtrack. This thing, so it kept coming back. It kept coming back at intervals. You know, it sort of came back an hour after that. And it was just strange. It was like these sounds that didn't really sort of fit into the, you know, acoustic environment that I was in. Something approached, something came. Each time I heard something coming down the steps and sort of like entering the museum, it wasn't the security guard, because he was sort of on duty up on his in his little compartment.
Probably asleep at that point.
Yeah, if he had any sense. Yeah.
Duncan, that's fascinating stuff, and I guess that covers what I wanted to raise about the ghosts and your experiences of sort of the paranormal in that sense. But the other thing that fascinates me regarding what you're up to in Brighton, and again, is all on your YouTube channel, is what you've been up to regarding locating chakra points with a pendulum.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got very little knowledge, if any, really, regarding the pendulum and how it works and stuff. But I just wondered if you could maybe just sort of explain what the process is and what's actually going on there. Like, you located actual specific locations in Brighton that represent chakra points.
Yeah.
And these are buildings. One of them that fascinated me was the repeater station, for the you know, like the big aerial that sends out the TV signals.
Yeah, Whitehawk Hill.
Whitehawk Hill, yeah. And I thought, what a fascinating point for it to be a chakra. It makes sense that that's a chakra point, you know. But so you've located these in Brighton, and presumably anyone can do this with a bit of experience for any town, any city, village, whatever that they're in. But the idea is, I imagine, that the pendulum guides you to these on a map.
Because
I noticed that you were using straight lines and you were drawing a sort of guideline, like a cross, and it was sort of swinging in certain ways. But I mean, I guess the first question I have for you is what do you feel is actually going on there?
Yeah.
And is the pendulum it sort of extension of your consciousness, or is there some entity guiding it, you know?
Yeah.
And secondly, I guess the next question I'd like to ask you is do these chakra points, are they somehow, do the buildings in these chakra points have some kind of symbolism in terms of what the chakras represent? So say, for example, like you've got a museum at one point, I think, or no, it was a church, wasn't it?
That's right.
Why is it a church? You know, do you think that this could be synchronicity?
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I mean, just regarding the pendulum, I mean, what is going on there?
Yeah, what is going on? Interestingly, the reason why I did that whole chakra working, was myself to get to grips with how to use a pendulum and, you know, what is actually going on when you use a pendulum. And the whole idea came from a chap called Ramsey Jukes, who's quite a prominent figure on the chaos magic scene. He's got a book out at the moment in which he guides people how to develop their psychic powers. And one of the chapters is on pendulum work. So you can use a pendulum to answer questions, you know, find out answers to questions, to guide you to particular places, all that sort of stuff. Now, I've used a pendulum myself for quite a while, but I've become really fed up with the crap results getting. I would ask the pendulum questions and it'd just tell me rubbish that obviously wasn't true or would turn out not to be true at a later time.
Yeah.
So one of the exercises that Ramsey Jukes recommends for getting to grips with the pendulum is to ask the pendulum a question that doesn't have a rational answer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, example of a question that doesn't have a rational answer. Where is the heart chakra of Brighton?
Right.
Yeah. the pendulum can give you an answer to that. It can guide you to a particular place. But what does that mean? Mm. You know, what does it mean? It can't be proved right. It can't be proved wrong. Now, the idea behind Ramsey Jukes' exercise for doing this is it sort of frees you up, yeah? Because you're using the pendulum to answer something that isn't right or wrong, you can just sort of like relax into it and let it take over.
Right.
Yeah. So that was where just the idea for the working
idea for it, yeah.
For the working came from. Now, I think this sort of stuff is really important. I think that in the modern world, our relationship to space is not good. Half the time we don't seem to be aware of our surroundings at all. This sort of work, you know, kind of injects more life into our environment.
Yeah.
You know, so like, you know, a human body has chakra points. Well, why not find out where the chakra points are in your city? You know, if your city has chakra points, then it becomes more like a kind of body. It becomes more like a kind of, you know, lived-in sort of place. It becomes more humanised.
Absolutely. And do you feel that the pendulum, I mean, what's your take on what the pendulum's actually doing though, at its core? Like, is it you that's doing this when you swing the pendulum on a subconscious level? Or is it perhaps, does the pendulum have its own consciousness? Is it its own spirit, if you like?
Interesting. You can approach it in either way. I mean, for me, the pendulum has a spirit.
Right.
There's a spirit that drives my pendulum, which has a specific name.
Right, because you invited that particular spirit in, didn't you?
Yeah.
And if you wanted, you could ask them to leave and you could replace them.
Yeah. With a better one, hopefully.
Updated.
So, again, it's like the belief-shifting thing in magic. You can view the pendulum as an extension of your own unconscious if you want to.
Sure.
Or you can sort of, like, you know, outsource it a little bit.
Right.
And have a spirit in there, which is what I prefer to do. So that just gives me a sort of a paradigm where it seems as if it's coming from outside me.
So I mean, that's in a way, then it kind of goes back to what you were saying about magic, in the sense that it's your truth that is what drives it. It's not necessarily the objective truth.
Yeah.
It has to be, as long as it's something that you feel works for you.
Yeah. Now, I experienced all sorts of, like, every single one of those journeys to find the chakra was a revelation to me. You know, I discovered something about Brighton I didn't know.
Well, this is what's fascinated me with your actual results.
Yeah.
In that regard, the pendulum's delivered, and these results are really intriguing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the locations, I mean, again, these are available on not only on your YouTube channel, but also the blog that you keep. I noticed you've got a very detailed essay on this. But do you feel, I mean, when you went to these locations...
Mm-hmm.
Is there any sense, really, that these buildings have any kind of symbolic meaning attached to them? Like the fact that those buildings happen to be at the chakra point, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there's a local fellow sort of Brighton-based researcher called Tim Refat, who's quite particularly well-known in America from his remote viewing research. But he believes, for example, that in Brighton in England, which he believes represents the base chakra of the country itself.
Yeah. For obvious reasons.
He believes that the government suppress this town, it's a city now, with microwave signals or this business, in order to keep the populace of, almost on a certain consciousness level, sort of, so we don't elevate to sort of 1960s style thinking and that, because in Tim Refat's view, the government understands chakra points to the point where it plants government buildings at sort of specific locations, and Brighton is this hotbed, if you like, of kind of rebellious attitudes and things, and for that reason we're under this sort of microwave soup of different signals. But I mean, that's really a sort of different subject entirely. It's sort of a New World Order, Big Brother and all this stuff. But
I don't know so much. I mean, I think this stuff is interesting and important because it means that you are investing your environment with meaning.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're going out there and discovering relationships to your environment that you wouldn't have discovered otherwise. Yeah. Mm. I think it sounds to me as if Tim Refat has done something similar.
Yeah. Sure.
But maybe has a kind of different attitude towards, you know, what he's discovered.
Yeah.
But for me, the exercise was about finding patterns and correspondences and meanings to my city where I live that I wouldn't have uncovered otherwise. You know, and I found bits of the town that I'd never been into before.
No.
And I mean, I've never really explored White Hawk Hill, which is an amazing place. The atmosphere up there is absolutely incredible.
I must give it a visit.
Yeah.
So, what did you find anything in particular that sort of fascinated you or shocked you?
Yeah,
or?
Bizarre things. Like, I mean, for me, the Bay Chakra led me to a chapel.
Right.
In this like residential street that I'd never been to before. It's like Catholic chapel. I was thinking, well, that's weird because, you know, the base chakra is basically the anus. So I was thinking, well, how does this work? And it was only later when I kind of Googled this particular chapel, and it turned out it's run by some like ultra orthodox Catholic sect. Wow. Who are so right wing that they got excommunicated by the Vatican. And they've been implicated in sort of like far right activities and all this sort of stuff. Oh yeah, I can see how that adds up now.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and other little things like the sex organ chakra turned out to be the local gym club.
Yeah, that really fascinated me, that. And the reason it did is because I have very odd memories attached to that specific gym.
Oh, right.
Because, I mean, I always have this memory of going there as a kid and there was a big party going on and it was like a ballpark and this sort of thing they put on.
Yeah.
Going back about 10 years or so. But I sort of think to myself, I've always had this odd sense of the memory of that place, and it's amazing when I saw your research that I have no idea what the symbolism or meaning is in terms of my memory of it, but I found it fascinating that building came up.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, just as a building, it's a fascinating building. It's a very sort of spooky-looking, mysterious building, actually, just in terms of its structure.
Yeah. Each one of those little walks was a like, kind of like little explosion of synchronicities. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I just love that sort of stuff because it just gives you more meaning, you know. It puts layers of meaning onto the city. Now, the interesting ones, these sort of journeys, are when you sort of get led to somewhere that doesn't seem at all impressive or significant.
Sure.
Those are the ones that always interest me. This has happened to me before where I remember I did another working at one time and I was led to this place and I was thinking, well, oh, this can't be right. It must have meant I had to go over there, you know. And so I tried to kind of consciously steer where I thought it was I ought to be going. And suddenly I started ending up in really horrible, depressing places and I got stuck on a roundabout and couldn't cross the road and all this sort of thing. And it made me realise that, no, it was right the first time. It's when you get led to a place that isn't really a place that it starts to get interesting, because that really kind of challenges your notion of you know, what places are.
Sure.
So, like, for one of those walks, the throat chakra turned out to be this, like, stretch of people's back gardens behind this row of houses that I couldn't even get to. And I was like, well, this can't be right. Well, why not?
Yeah.
Why isn't that a place as interesting, as full of stuff, as full of meaning, as anything else?
Absolutely.
You know, if the pendulum leads you to some sort of like little lay-by, you know, with the weeds or something, you know, why isn't that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, we're always looking for meaning, aren't we?
Yeah.
And perhaps, as you say, that there's meaning, there's just as much meaning to a shrub.
Yeah.
So it's to some great grand church.
And I think a lot of the time we're too easily allowing ourselves to be told, you know, what our place is and what aren't, where we can go and where we can't. You know, if it doesn't have shops, then it can't be anywhere worth going, that sort of thing.
So where was the heart chakra in Brighton?
The heart chakra was this disused playing field. I think it's called Red Hill Playing Fields, and it's up in, is it Withdean?
Yeah, I think so.
That sort of area. Yeah. It's on private land, but the day I was up there, for some reason, the gate was open, so I managed to get in there. Yeah, it was a very atmospheric place. It was like a small playing field, spectacularly overgrown with like chest-high weeds. you know, this sort of like little oasis of rampant nature in the middle of this kind of like posh housing estate.
Again, I mean, as you described that location, I think to myself, what's the meaning? You know, why is that the heart chakra? But it's very hard to say.
Yeah.
I mean, and the other one that fascinated me was, only again, I can't remember what chakra point this represented, but was the antenna, the repeater station,
which was the belly chakra.
The belly chakra, right. Yeah. And again, I sort of think to myself, you know, that's putting out a big signal to everyone. What's the meaning? But it's the human mind's attempt of trying to sort of, I guess, rationalise things.
Yeah.
And then the other one was the manor house, wasn't it?
Yeah, Patchen Place.
Patchen Place, yeah. Which I guess because you're in the video that you've got, you go and you explore this location and sort of approach it. And I always think to myself, the first thing that I'd want to do now is investigate A, who owns it now, what the history is of that building, and yeah, it would be a fascinating topic to sort of understand it a bit more.
Yeah.
But
of course you have to do that afterwards, because you know, you turn up with in these places, you don't necessarily
know.
What it's
going to give you,
you just have to experience what's there.
But no, it's fascinating, and it certainly, I mean, from my perspective, it certainly got me interested in giving the pendulum a go.
Yeah. So. Now I guarantee, if you give this exercise a go, you'll get a completely different set of chakras.
Right. Yeah.
And that's absolutely fine.
it's
because then it will be, you know, your own sort of pattern of meaning onto the town.
Sort of a subjective, my own. Individual subjective set of chakra points.
I think it's also a kind of meditational exercise, because it leads you out of the normal template that you know you mentally impose upon the place where you live.
Yeah. Well, Duncan, that's been an absolutely fascinating series of conversations we've had regarding some wide-ranging topics.
Yeah, cheers, Martin.
And I hope to speak to you again soon.
Yeah, nice one.